so many times when you talk to them in the field, like, hey, I want to try this tool on my job, or I want to do this thing on my job. And so that's a good way to just keep chasing the shinies and never quite get anywhere. So instead, we're really trying to work hard on, all right, I understand you want to try this, but give me a problem statement. Tell me I need a better solution for T&M tags on my job. I need a better way to track safety certifications on my job. Tell me that, and then I can look at tools and we can evaluate them.
Welcome to Built Different, a podcast featuring teams, technology, and trendsetters who are changing the way that we build. I'm Grant Hagen.
And I'm Brian Mizzaretta.
And we welcome you to join a community obsessed with questioning the status quo,
creating cultures of innovation,
and equipping everyone with powerful tools to quite simply build different.
Well, welcome back to the Built Different podcast. Joined with Brian Vizzaretta, I'm one of your hosts, Grant Hagen. Thank you all so much for tuning in with us here on episode 8. We have just another really fun conversation with our friend Jesse over at Swinnerton, and we're bringing back an OG from season 1 with Matt Daly, one of the co-founders from Struction Site, here on the show as well. So Brian, what kind of stands out from this conversation that we got to have with these two?
We just got directly into it. You know, what's the difference between a partner and a vendor, right? Anybody can sell you technology, but who's going to be there by your side to make sure it gets rolled out?
Yeah. And that's a really important thing that I'm glad that we got to talk about on this episode. I think oftentimes we just kind of get lost in the mix of really the people behind some of these softwares that are getting created. And so we just really appreciated Jesse's perspective and really Matt coming in here as well and adding a little bit of commentary from his side of it as well. So we hope this conversation was encouraging for you guys and we enjoy the opportunity to get to put it in front of you. We will see you on the next episode.
Well, welcome to the Built a Different podcast powered by Drone Deploy and Struction Site. I'm your host, Grant Hagen, joined with Mr. Brian V.
Yes, sir.
Good to hear from you, Brian.
Good to hear from
and
you.
And the too. Original, I cannot understate enough, the original host, Matt Daly, coming back.
Well, one of the original hosts.
One of the original. We can't leave out Chris.
Yeah, that's right. No, the better of the two hosts isn't here.
There it is.
Us, wow. The one you guys got me today. So yeah, whenever we can get Mr. Jervy back on,
should be replaced with fortunate to have you.
This is
really fun. I don't know how Brian and I got past this torch, but hey, we've had some awesome conversations. We're alive here at Procore Groundbreak interviewing some folks. We have Jesse with Swinnerton here, which is going to be really fun and have some great conversations. Joined with Matt, we were just talking about some great topics that we've gotten to learn and kind of hear from here at the conference. And Jesse, thanks for joining in with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is really fun. We would love to hear just a little bit about your background, Swinnerton, maybe as a company.
Yep, can do. I don't like being able to say it, but I've been in construction for over 20 years now.
That's okay.
I don't feel like I'm old enough to say that, but I am. I started as a communications technician, actually, in the union.
Oh, wow.
I just kind of fell into a job that was doing Comtech stuff, IBEW. I was an apprentice, went through senior technician. I taught at the hall. Did that about 7 years before I came to Swinnerton. Back then, it was HMH Builders in Sacramento. I worked on a lot of their jobs as a sub and liked them as a general. They were the nice ones, you know, so... I went to them when I was looking to move on and joined up. I told them, I was like, you know, you have these MEP guys, but no one does low voltage. You know, no one that does your AV coordination and fire alarm and nurse call and all that stuff. This is what I did. And they said, yeah, you're right. So they hired me. So I went through as a project engineer, MEP coordinator, and I've been there 15 years now. About six and a half years ago, I moved over to the technology group.
Okay.
And so I've had, I don't know, six different titles in that group. But right now it's Emerging Technology Manager, which is a name that I made up and a role that I made up, which is fun.
Come on. We need more of those.
Yeah. It was basically that there was the nice thing is when you're asked to put together a program to accomplish something by the executives, it's pretty easy to get it approved. So they wanted someone, we have an innovations group, but they wanted someone to do more near term, 6 to 12 month, you know, horizon problem statement solution.
Is that what you're kind of labeling as emerging technology?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So 6 to 12 months out.
Yes. And specifically with problem statements, not solution statements. So many times when you talk to people in the field, like, hey, I want to try this tool on my job or I want to do this thing on my job. And so that's a good way to just, you know, keep chasing the shinies and never quite get anywhere. So instead, we're really trying to work hard on, all right, I understand you want to try this, but give me a problem statement. Tell me I need a better solution for T&M tags on my job. I need a better way to track safety certifications on my job. Tell me that, and then I can look at tools and we can evaluate them.
Contrast that a little bit with the innovation team. So what's kind of the difference between what you're really focusing on versus them?
So they're much more, you know, things that are 5 to 10 years off.
Okay.
You know, and also things that are, it seems to kind of break down to physical innovations as well. So the innovations group is actually not in our technology group. They're actually organized underneath our Supperform. Supperform being one of our biggest, you know, drives in the next few years, well, last few years and the next forever years.
And so they tend to end up a lot of times with things like the, what's the drywall saw, the demo saw, Grizzly saw, right? Is that the one that does the demo saw and that kind of stuff?
Okay.
The drywall robot, we built a rig for, we do a lot of CLT and mass timber.
Oh, wow.
And CLT takes these huge lags.
You've got to give me some CLT acronyms here.
Cross-laminated timbers.
Thank you.
It's basically plywood, but it's 6 inches thick.
If you've been in construction long enough and don't know all the acronyms,
right,
you're in the right spot. And Swinerton, you are out of the...
I'm out of the Sacramento office.
Okay.
But our technology group's based in Concord, which is probably more my home, but I don't go to either office very often. It's mostly just out to conferences and hitting the division offices.
Cool. Okay. Yep. And how did the emerging tech, did it come from the innovation team? Was it its own separate thing? That's a pretty unique.
This is exactly my question.
Yeah.
You mentioned, like, because I think people are going to want to know, they're like top down. Somebody, they came to you and said, we want you to create this. What was the impetus for that? Like, why did that happen? And you know,
the executives, so we have a BTEC. So BTEC is our IT group. We call it BTEC. We have a steering committee that has executives on it that kind of give us feedback on what we're working on and what they want us to work on. And one of the requests they had was they recognized that the operations teams didn't have people answering the near-term stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing to go and say, hey, I'd like to be able to, in 5 or 6 years, have a spot robot walk around and, you know, do everything for me on the job site. But there wasn't someone who was answering these kind of quicker turnaround. I have these right now real-term problems on our job site. And so they wanted to build a program that did that. And so we call it the Emerging Tech or Explorer program. We have kind of two names for it.
I think it's just really interesting actually hearing you talk about like the idea of reframing the solution statement as a problem statement. And now I understand why you get along so well with Brianna, because this is this is basically like a lot of what you do in product management at a tech company is trying to actually reframe the, I need this thing, in the context of like, what is the actual problem you are trying to solve? And let's start with that.
Right. And it's also in construction, we all know root cause analysis, right? When we have an incident or safety, you're always, this happened because this, right? So it's kind of the same thing. We're taking that solution and turning it into, well, why do you really need that? Is it actually a need for technology or is it a process problem? Mm-hmm. So sometimes the solutions I come up with are going to be process changes. So it's a matter of, well, if we just did this differently, then we can get rid of that problem as well, or we can be more efficient that way.
And tell us a little bit about your team. And that's this is not a individual lone soldier affair. Tell us a little bit about kind of how that build out has progressed.
So in the actually emerging technology program itself right now, it's just me in the team, but I work in what we call
are the lone soldier.
I am the lone soldier in this case, but not really, because I'm a part of what we call our field applications team.
Okay.
So we have one group that manages kind of ERP, which is, you know, CMIC, Textura, that sort of stuff. And then we've got five of us that manage like 85 other tools.
Okay.
So, you know, we've got people that concentrate in like pre-construction and VDC tools, and we've got our Autodesk product manager and, you know, people that do craft stuff. And so those people are all part of the team because they're the ones that when I come to these conferences, a lot of these things that I'm seeing and talking about all touch on products and things that we already manage.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to be going out there and implementing necessarily stuff that we already do, but I can augment their education and their knowledge by bringing stuff back to them.
And so five other kind of cohorts.
Yeah, they're product managers is what we call them in the field apps.
Interesting. Okay, cool. And is it pretty hard and fast of like, hey, if this is more than a 12-month type of thing that moves the innovation team or?
Not really. In fact, we just did a whole process of sitting down. We have a new business analyst in our in BTEC that helped us map the innovation to adoption process, as we called it.
Okay.
And that was me with the BA and Aaron Anderson, our head of innovations. And we sat down and mapped out the entire process flow of, all right, sometimes, you know, things are handed to you as innovations or changes, and some things you'd find on your own. Some is shadow IT that kind of grows up and you find it. And so he and I talked about and mapped out that entire process flow, like 7 pages of process on where might it hand off between the groups.
Okay.
And then, so it certainly isn't a hard and fast 12-month rule. It's more about when I get the problem statements in, I have a monthly Explorer committee that I meet with, which has leaders across the company on that with me. And I say, everybody, here's what we've been going. Here's the incubations we're doing right now. We're trying these things out. Here's the statuses. And here's the new statements, new problems we've gotten in the last little bit. What do you guys think? Which of these are important enough that they need to be addressed by this group? Which of these should be, you know, kind of bent for a while?
And that group is a diverse group of field and office.
Yeah, regional VDC in there. We've got head of talent is in there.
Oh,
I've got someone from our corporate services group. So they handle a lot of the Amazons and Apples and that kind of stuff. I've got the head of our MD Builders, which is our non-union builders group in California. So I've got a division manager from Portland.
You know, are they selected or are they invited? Like, I'm assuming that's a pretty big ask to be a part of that kind of group to help drive some of that.
I try and make sure it's a really low, they don't need much commitment of time, you know? So I try and keep that pretty simple. But I put a medium list together of who I thought would make good people on the team and then put that through my management leadership, wanted to see who they thought it was a good diverse people. I also didn't want the group to be too big. I don't want people sitting 12 people on a call and not be able to get a word in edgewise. Yeah. So I wanted to keep it pretty small. And it's morphed over time as some people have left and moved on. And so I'll bring new people in from different groups. But I try and make sure, you know, I'm very, very careful with my time asks from people. So if I put a monthly meeting invite out there, first of all, I will usually make it from like 11:10 in the morning until 11:55. So you got 10 minutes before the meeting where you can actually be done with your 10 to 11 o'clock meeting and actually breathe for a human.
Are we taking notes on this? Because that is, man.
It's pretty nice. And then we always make sure I end right on time at you know, 5 minutes till so that people have time to go do stuff. So if I'm going to ask for that time, I'm going to be very conscious with it.
Yeah, let's get a little pause for that. Come on. I mean, that's...
Where's the Zuzu?
Goodness. Muzella. I mean, it's small stuff like that that show other people that you care for their time and respect it. And so... Guys, I've been asking a lot of questions. Hop in here, man. It's just a really cool format and just kind of framework that you guys have.
I got a couple of things. One of them is just kind of thinking about how we could support folks out there who are thinking about trying to take this journey that you guys are now on, especially in your role. Because one of the things that, you know, we're here at Procore, we're talking about a lot of like the adoption of technology and construction. I think there was a pretty interesting report put out by the team over at Building Ventures that went into a decent amount of detail to show the actual performance of a construction company relative to its investment in innovation and R&D. And it was like a very clear, it's not like directly linear to the number of people, but companies who had invested more of their balance sheet into R&D, you know, or their P&L into that area had outperformed by their numbers, other businesses. But it was what you guys you've made another step on the journey. A lot of companies are like, I have one person who's the IT innovation person.
Yeah.
Right. And that's kind of where the journey begins. And then you start to grow that a little bit as you recognize that investment in innovation is actually leading to potentially more wins as a business, better outcomes, more profits on projects, retention of your people.
Yep.
But what you guys have done is you've actually added another layer to the innovation team that is now addressing like this different area.
Right.
And so I guess for the people out there who are thinking about, you know, they have taken the step you guys have taken, you have that first innovation team. What are the symptoms that you would be looking for that somebody could share with their leadership team as a way of like, hey, look, you might want to think about having somebody in this role? Or I mean, what sort of do you think spurred your leadership team on?
Well,
to actually make that move.
To go back into the premise of it, I think if we look at that report from the group talking about R&D and how much it ends up affecting your companies, I don't think really spend that much on it though. It really isn't a huge dollar spend. It's a decent amount of time spend because it's, you know, but even my time isn't 100% on that right now. I'd like it to be, but it really isn't a huge investment. Like someone like DPR has an entire R&D and innovations groups that are really big compared to us, certainly. But the symptoms that I think you look for and that what probably kind of spurred us on this path was people doing too many different solutions that were doing the same thing out in the field. So seeing groups that were trying and using different tools, answering the same problems and not taking advantage of support and costs of things that were already being paid for and supported and trained on, and also starting to fragment data. That's another big part too, is when we get data into too many silos, we can't find where it is. We can't act on it. We can't use it as leading indicators. You know, if people are doing quality in three different tools, we can't look at our quality management, right? So I would say the symptom would be if you've got groups that are using more tools, you know, that are doubling up and tripling up on things, there's one way you could say, hey, we could probably cut down on this, save a lot of money on, you know, the spend of these types of tools if we centralize support and, you know, and look at things that way. One of the parts of the program that I want to build and haven't had a chance to do yet, and it's intended to be kind of the funnel for the entire thing, is what I'm calling the product discovery catalog, which is supposed to be like Yelp for tools at Swinnerton. So if you hear of any tool, you hear of them like a rail car was like an inspection tool. So like, you know, think about if you hear about a tool on the job site and you want to know, wait, do we use that? then be able to go and search it in this product discovery catalog and see, yes, we looked at it. We decided we did not want to go with this. Instead, please use this tool. Or yes, we looked at it. It's a great tool. It's not centrally supported, but here's where you can find a link to get set up for it in our, you know, our account manager. Or yes, we looked at it and it's an enterprise agreement we have, and talk to this person to make sure you got your license set up. I want that for every tool anyone's ever heard of. Just have at least have an entry in it.
And also having a direct catalog of all the projects and the type of projects right. that it's worked well on.
And
right?
who like, used it and have reviews and how, oh, Cameron gave 5 stars to that on his project. I should call Cameron and see why yeah. he liked it so much.
But, you know, hospital renovation project right. versus new build construction, right?
Right?
Like
right.
how do those get used differently, right? Like same right. tool, different right. intention.
And the other example I end up using for it too is like, all right, if you go and look for a webcam for your project, I could probably point at 7 of them here today, right? So if you go and you look for EarthCam and you find EarthCam in the listing, have it just like you would in Yelp. Hey, you like EarthCam, check out OxBlue, check out Sincera, check out TrueLook, check out all these other tools and have them. Oh, I forgot that one. I used that a couple jobs ago. I forgot about that. And have all of them kind of together in these bundles so that people can look for a solution. The funnel part of it being, okay, I looked for a solution for T&M tags and I couldn't find one that worked for me. Okay, now let me submit a problem statement to the emerging technology program. Hey, I have a problem with this. And I already have that part done. So the form problem statement on is done. I need to build that funnel next.
I want to go back a little bit to how problem statements get submitted, because I think that's a unique kind of link between your team and the field team.
Right.
Is it as simple as them kind of going in
Microsoft Forms?
Nice.
Yeah, Microsoft Forms. I have like a 7-question form. That, you know, say, you know, what's your problem statement? You know, describe it as best you can.
Yeah.
And then how does that align with these corporate strategic goals?
Nice.
So, you know, and what does it do? You know, does it increase revenue? Does it reduce risk? Does it enhance satisfaction? And those kinds of things as well. And then one of them is like, none of the above. So which if you check that one, then why are you submitting it?
That automatically doesn't get submitted.
Exactly. And then it asks questions like, do you have an idea for, you know, how much it might cost to solve this?
Sure.
Is it $1,000? Is it $100,000? And just you have an idea. If you don't, fine. But at least get it, you know, the first questions in there.
How many of those do you get? Like what's the submission rate?
It's only a couple a month right now because I haven't had enough. I've been so busy with the other project that I haven't had a chance to really push it out there and get it out there. And I do really see that eventually that product discovery catalog will be that funnel.
And
people get trained to do it.
Who does that get marketed to? Is that an open link in kind of your guys' internal?
Put it on some of our newsletters. I've got it posted on our intranet. We use a SharePoint. We call it SwinNet. So there's a page on there for that product. My program is a product on that page. So it gets listed there. And it's also like I spend a lot of time going to Aaron with his innovations group. They have quarterly innovation challenges. Asking for, you know, some of the more, you know, further stuff and having people submit a bunch of neat stuff that way. I go to a lot of those meetings and kind of help him MC those just so I can talk about my program too.
Sure.
So they know that it's going on as well.
Sure. Go for it, Brian.
So I want to ask you an interesting question, right? So when you were looking at differentiation from the field side versus, you know, the office side, right? Like people care about different things.
Right.
Right. The field side might care the most about cost, but the office might actually think about, okay, long term, how is this data going to work with what we have, right?
Like
that company's stance on interoperability may be different, but the field team's choosing it for another reason.
Right.
You know, how do you kind of manage that as well?
Right. So if that problem statement makes it into my program and we actually fully go through it as part of the incubation, we basically, once we say, yes, we're going to solve this problem or try to, then it goes into the incubation phase and we incubate it for 3 to 8 months, somewhere in there, hopefully. And then move it out. And so as part of that incubation phase, part of that discovery is, all right, how do these tools, you know, there's one problem might have 4 or 5 solutions. The team A is using this tool, team B is using that tool. That's part of what I will look at. And I'll look at APIs, data, you know, look at cybersecurity, that kind of stuff, and do all the looking at stuff that the fields don't really care about. They care about price and performance, right? Is it something I can afford in my job? Can I talk my PM into paying for it? And does it do what I want it to do? And then, but they're like, oh, I don't really care about, oh, they're owned by, you know, Russian hackers and the Chinese government, you know, oh, so we're going to use TikTok on our jobs and maybe not the best thing to document in your jobs. So I will do all of those, you know, the nitty gritty, you know, stuff that isn't as fun for the project teams to look at that stuff and say, okay, well, this is disqualified completely because of this. And it might not be just data security or APIs. It might be that some tools we've looked at for certain things, they just have no way to handle our company structure, you know, because we've got groups in Denver and Austin, but also Colorado. And then Sacramento and Portland and everywhere. And we need those groups to be able to operate in their own, you know, tenants or environments, or whatever, but also be able to roll up reporting structures and be able to push templates out to all those different tenants. And some tools just have no concept of being able to you know, at a basically an enterprise level, be able to manage that stuff. So the groups in the field, again, they don't care. I'm in Sacramento. I'm looking to make sure it does my stuff. I don't care whether I can share information with Portland, but I'll look at that stuff too. And so sometimes it's just a matter of going through and disqualifying things. So, okay, well, these two or three are left. I'm sorry, you guys that tried these, they're not going to be able to work moving forward. Let's look at these three and really evaluate those.
I mean, that's also a really good point, right? Those field teams need to feel comfortable to bring it to you, and you act as the shield,
right?
You're like, great, you have interest. I will help, you know, do my due diligence for you so you don't have to later on find out that this may not even do what you want.
Right. Yeah. And they have to, sometimes though, they might know that coming to me means that they might get a no, and they might get, you know, disallowed. I was one of the first people that flew UAVs in our company back in 2014, back before we had Part 107, right? So it was DJI was finally putting out, you know, the Phantoms that you could actually fly pretty decently, pretty cheap. I did the whole like hand soldering in the 5 gig transmitter for a GoPro and everything.
Wow.
And I flew the first couple times. I got approval ahead of time from local management. I was not in VTech. I was in Sacramento and said, all right, I'm going to do some of this flying. And I did the flying, made some videos. It was just videos of a job site. I was doing, made some nice stuff. And I gave it to the management, said, okay, here it is. So let's make sure we're good moving forward. And we got the, oh my God, no, you got to stop doing that right now. We're all going to die. You know, I don't want to ask
we're
the question.
We're all
going to die. Yeah. I don't want to ask because they're going to tell me no, you know? So I don't want to be, the whole reason I brought that part up is that I don't want people to not bring me their problems because they don't want to get, I do shadow IT and I don't want to get in trouble for having done that. I want to support them in getting their job done, but get them to understand why we have more questions, why we needed to scale.
I think we've been talking a lot about just building trust on here and the ways in which you can do it. And unfortunately, trust isn't a linear process. It has highs and lows and times that you make investments and you make withdrawals. And it's you do want to be that trusted source for those teams. Because we even had someone earlier talk about never not tell someone you can't help with them to print something. And it's like, that may seem like the most mundane task, but it's like, hey, they're going to come back for, you don't even know what they're going to ask you for. And that could open up a whole nother, you know, opportunity to work with them and build trust with them.
Yeah. We call it, in our group, relationship capital.
Yeah.
So when, you know, when I go out to different division offices for even like a PM meeting, PE meeting, I can help you install your printer driver. Yeah, I can do, I mean, it's not my job to do it, but I've got the admin credentials and I can work you.
Yeah.
I might have to help you get with the service desk to do it the right way.
Right.
But I go out and help with all that stuff that isn't necessarily right in my wheelhouse because when I need to test something and do a trial somewhere, hey, remember how much I helped you?
Appreciate
you know, you get them to, you're cashing in that relationship capital that you built up with them over the years, which is important to have people that have been around long enough to have built that capital up too.
Yeah.
I do have a question, actually, maybe almost a little bit of a right turn here on this conversation since we've been talking about innovation, but it's also, we talked earlier about like, you know, why are you here? You're at Procore. You know, what's your mission here? And you know, what could you share with the folks out there about what you're kind of evaluating here?
Yeah. It's all the swag. I want those dry bags and dry bags and Yeti cup. So there's, you know, there's the usual, you know, checking in, at, you know, post COVID with everybody that I haven't seen in a long time, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But then also even more important to us is looking at partners, whether it's, you know, vendors or Procore or anything like that, is culture and how we kind of match up. It's important to us. The way I kind of tend to describe it is partners, not vendors. That's a really important distinction. There's lots of people that you work with that are they're just a vendor and they're just there to sell your product. They don't care about whether the roadmap aligns with yours, whether their, you know, their goals as a company align with yours. You know, so there are, but then there's partners where you actually, they get excited to solve your problems. And like, you get a call back, hey, I was thinking about this. You had a problem where we couldn't figure out how to do this in my system. I think if we look at the way we use tags over here, we can probably find a way to, and like, they're excited to like solve problems together. I'm like, oh, and if we talk to engineering, we can probably get an easy way to change that in the database so you can customize the name of that field or whatever. That's a partner approach as opposed to a vendor approach. Some of that is, you know, size dependent. You know, the size of a big company is, it's harder to get that kind of accommodation, that kind of excitement. But you know, in some companies, just no matter what size they are, they're just not interested in adapting that way and being kind of agile that way. And so that's where I feels like we are as a whole tending to weed out the vendors wherever we can and get to partners instead. Open data standards, being able to share data between systems, you know, being able to capture data in one system, being able to analyze it in another one instead of having it all locked into one, is that kind of stuff is very important.
Yeah, like how, so those are some of the things that you think about, you know, partner versus vendor. I really like that. I also love that you're thinking about the culture of the company that you're looking to evaluate.
That was the first thing you said.
I don't think that is thought of enough in terms of how to evaluate a partner.
Right.
I'd love to hear more about that. Like, you know, who are you meeting? How do you guys go about evaluating the culture of the business that you might partner with?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something you can find at the booth usually in a conference hall. Mm-hmm. And it isn't necessarily something that's probably not a first level, you know, review. It's something that once you've, you know, medium and shortlisted people and start to look at them, it's more about, all right, you know, having longer term conversations. So unfortunately, these days, a lot of times it's Zoom or Teams calls, which are a harder time to kind of get a real feel for people. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the values that come into these events too, is that you do get some, you get your scripted time, and then you eventually can wander off down the non-scripted alley a little bit, and you can kind of get a feel for the people, which means that's extra important for companies like you guys on picking who you have in the booth, you know, because people that don't just know the product, don't just know how to sell something, but know how to actually connect with people and get you to kind of understand, oh, well, that's really one of our goals. We want to get our company to be doing this over the long run. You know, we really are trying to market ourselves or position ourselves for this type of market segment because we feel it's important to do this. Those kind of conversations are what kind of give us a clue for that. So it's not something you can't control F find that in a document. You have to really search for it the long way.
Wow. This might be a tough question. And I think it's actually generally very hard for most of our customers to answer, because there tends to be many, but like, what are the sort of core values at Swinnerton?
I think every company thinks their core values are unique, right?
Yeah.
But one of the things that I am noticing more and more over the years of being here is how different I think employee ownership makes a lot of our decisions. Mm-hmm. Because our decisions and our roadmap and our path aren't determined by Wall Street or by a private owner. It's really a matter of what do the 5,000 employees of Swinnerton, you know, want it to do. Obviously want it to make money, so that we can all make money, but how we get there, you know, the things we invest in, really is something that we talk about and vote on as employee owners and that sort of stuff and have a lot of ownership in. So I feel like we have pretty good values for that sort of stuff. For me, it really is. I'm a bit of a, you know, a bit of a lefty in that I want to have, you know, good, clean environment. You know, I want that kind of stuff. I want everyone's life to get better. I want to see the, you know, rising tide lifting all ships. So I look for companies, you know, at least I'm not looking for it actively, but I'm kind of getting a feel for, is this company in it to, yes, make money? Absolutely. But, you know, can we do it in a way that's sustainable and makes things better for, you know, where my kids are going to grow up, which it sounds really, you know, highfalutin as well, too. But it really is something that, you know, that I tend to believe in.
No, I mean, honestly, I think it's a really good lens to look through when you think about who to work with. And I think what you're saying is it's like, it's something that you're going to get a sense for. You're going to have to put a lot of puzzle pieces together
right. As
you get to know a company and their objectives. And over time, if they do what they say they're going to do,
right. Those
sort of things that do ultimately build trust.
Right. And how have they grown so far? You know, it's like what things have they done? You know, whose shoulders have they stood on, or like, you know, who have they undercut to try and get to, if you know, it's what they've done to position themselves where they are kind of determines a little bit of how they're going to go. And obviously things are going to change over time. You know, you're going to have new people, you're going to change, mm-hmm. you're going to have companies come and, you know, acquire you and things like that are going to, you know, but I had a lot of conversations with Bree on the flight in here about how much that aligned already too between mm-hmm. instruction site and drone deploy. And that's got to be even a harder conversation, harder thing to really compare, is looking at if you're really going to join forces that much, getting that alignment to be that right and finding someone that it can be a partner that well is pretty important and can have been an easy thing for them to have gone through. So,
yeah, I mean, you're completely right about this. You know, it's almost like a marriage when you sign on a 3-year deal with a partner.
A lot can change.
Right. And then, yeah, exactly. And then not just that, but it's, you know, it's just like, when people ask us about, you know, what's your differentiator, right? Like
right. Sometimes
people tend to go to features as differentiators, but features can be replicated, right? The way a company is structured is honestly a differentiator in itself, right? Like
right. You're
all general contractors, right? You have 3 of them in the room. You're all in that room because you can build that building.
Right.
Why do you get chosen? It's the relationships. It's the execution of what you do and doing what you say you were going to do and then doing it again and again and again.
I think oftentimes we talk about culture as an output. We hope that it turns out in a certain way, but we don't often talk about the inputs required to make it what it should be. Jesse, I'm curious a little bit too. I think Matt said it well earlier. You uh, you guys are obviously paving the way on kind of the next step and a little bit, I would say, farther ahead in just this idea of emerging tech and innovation and implementation of some of these different things. What would you want to like encourage folks that maybe are in kind of the mess and the muck and the just, hey, I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, like having a hard time pushing that within their own company?
Right.
Like what would you want to encourage them with just that you've kind of seen maybe in a little retrospect in hindsight?
Right. Yeah. We discussed this a little before we started about, you know, trying to get people in the field to understand why the pace of technology is what it is. Right. Yeah. Because they'll get emails and, you know, newsletters and stuff of all the newest things, all the newest shinies out here, and want to know why we can't have it on our job next week. Right. And I was the same way. I wanted to know the same things. You know, I was the one who always pushed for having my own admin password when I was in the field so I could just do my own stuff, not understanding how risk management works and how important it is to do things that have been in a bit of a slower pace so that we can make the best decisions for the company as a whole. I would say just be patient and understand that if we reacted to every single thing that happened, you know, right away and tried every new thing out, it'd be like trying to drive down the road. And every time you see a squirrel, you're just aiming back at the squirrel and you end up all over the road and you don't get where you're going fast enough. Whereas if you had a plan to know, hey, I'm going to hit that squirrel 10 miles down the road, then you can plan and get there.
It's a lot of squirrels.
Yeah. Poor squirrels. Poor squirrels, I know. That's not one of our culture things. It's not.
Take out the squirrels.
Yes. So I guess understanding how, especially as a bigger company of 5,000 people, $5 billion is a pretty big ship. But your company, even if you aren't that big, you might not have the same infrastructure to affect change that we've got. We've got a pretty decently sized technology group. That is there to try and be the rudder to help steer the ship where we can technology-wise. But if you've got a smaller company, just understand that it takes a lot to look at these things carefully and evaluate them and make sure that all the things we've talked about today when it comes to, you know, just data storage and interoperability and APIs and scaling and all that kind of stuff, it's not just a matter of, does it work for me on this job site? Is it the best thing for my company as a whole? And will it get us where we're going?
And where would you, well said, where would you encourage them to start?
It depends on their company structure, you know, as far as if they're looking to implement change themselves. I mean, it seems like a lot of it, at least you can have a gateway with your local VDNC in a lot of companies. VDNC tends to be kind of like the shepherds of a lot of this technology. And they tend to be because they're the ones that are already technology involved that they end up being tasked with the local technology stuff. So it probably couldn't hurt to ask your VDNC folks, hey, where do we go if we want to try and be a part of the innovations group or a part of, you know, this type of stuff, and ask them, because they're probably involved in it somehow, in my experience. Or if if you're big enough, like a McCarthy or a DPR, places like that, I'm sure there's an entire innovations page on your intranet, and talk to those people and say, you know, we're always looking for, maybe not all of us, but I think typically people that are in these roles are looking for people to be stewards and to be super users and to be, you know, we do a lot of our stuff with super users, especially when it comes to training and support. Well, we will train, you know, a cadre of 10 or 15 people and have them be the support out there in the divisions answering the actual questions, because we don't have 15 people in our group to support every single tool. You know, it doesn't end up happening. Look and see what they could use. Ask them if you can be a part of their innovations challenges or, you know, help out somehow.
Yeah. Well said. Man, this is awesome. There's so many mental notes and takeaways I have of,
mostly start your meetings 10 minutes after the hour and end them 5 minutes before.
Honestly, guys, if we all did that, think of the world that we would live in on our calendars.
People like it. And what I also do with that too, like I'll usually each month even IM the group before we start. I'll say, hey, I'm going to jump on about 5 or 10 minutes early.
Nice. Yeah,
if you want to just catch up. Yeah. So I'm going to go get my coffee. I'll see you guys there if you want to. And then we can talk and BS for 5 or 10 minutes. So and then we start right on time.
A 45-minute meeting, 10 minutes after, 5 minutes early.
Yep.
Man, guys.
The beginning cap and the end cap.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you give me some invites, if you get some invites from me, know that they're going to turn into 45-minute segments.
Yeah. Well, it's like people, when they know that you're going to respect their time, they tend to be a little more generous with attending. You know, it's hard to get division managers and strategic talent partners to make it to a meeting like that. So if you're really diligent and cautious with their time and the time ask you have, then you tend to get more attendance.
Yeah, well said. And the Yelp of construction.
Make if that anybody happen. Knows what you can just, if there's like a plugin for SharePoint that just does that, I cannot find one. I'm going to have to build one, I think, with Journey Team. But if you know of just a little plugin I can spend $500 to just put it on SharePoint, I'd do it, man.
There's another startup being born somewhere right now, to solve this problem.
Yeah. Jesse, super fun. Thank you for joining in with us.
No problem.
Matt, always great to have you back.
Yeah, this thanks for having really me. Fun.
And Brian, man, couldn't do it without you, buddy.
Oh, yeah, we're rocking and rolling now.
Let's keep it going.
Jesse, proud to have the OG here, apparently. So,
yeah.
Love it, love it. Well, thank you guys again for tuning in with us on the Built Different podcast. We look forward to seeing you on our next episode. Talk to you then.
Make sure to subscribe to Built Different on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Let's build this community together.